Good morning, ladies. We are studying today Parashat Ki Tetze. Ki Tetze literally means when you shall go out. It's no coincidence that we usually read this parasha towards the end of the summer, when people are in the head of leaving Ki Tetze. And next week, when the people go back to Brooklyn, we read Parashat Ki Tavo. Ki Tavo is when they come in, when they enter. So the parashiyot definitely have to do with the current events of our traveling. Now we're in the subjects of Ki Tetze and Ki Tavo. The main thing is that everybody goes in peace and comes in peace, in good health. Amen. I just like to make one point which I think is very significant today. The parasha begins about the Jewish soldiers going out to war. Ki tetze lamilchama al oyevecha. There's an enemy that the Jewish people are fighting against. And the Torah says that God willing, Borei Olam will deliver the enemies into our hands. When we go fight wars, God fights with us. Like the Pasuk says, Adonai ish milhama, Adonai shemo. God is a warrior. Adonai yilachem lachem, ve'atem taharishum. God fights for us. But we have to make an effort. So we go out to hold the gun or the sword. But really the war is fought from above. All our wars are spiritual. But the Torah tells us an amazing, amazing halakha. The Jewish soldier is on the battlefield. Vera'ita bashivya, and he sees amongst the people in captivity, Eshet yefatoa. Wait. A woman who is beautiful of form. Wow, there's no way you can explain that. It is what it is. He sees a beautiful woman. Vehashakta ba. And he has a desire. Wow. We have to continue reading. What's going to happen over here? So the Torah says, "Velakachta lecha leisha," and you're going to want to take her as a wife, but she's not even Jewish. So the Torah makes an exception over here, like no other exception in the whole book from beginning to end. There's a Gemara on it from here till tomorrow. All the details. But the basic law is the Torah allows the soldier to take this goya to fulfill his desire, and then if she wants to convert, she can convert, if not, not. Why would the Torah allow this? How could the Torah sanction such a thing? But this is the law of Eshet Yefatoar, where the soldier in the war, if he desires one of the ladies in captivity, he is able to fulfill this desire. We never see such a law like this. And let's say I'm walking by a McDonald's and I have a desire to eat a cheeseburger. Do we say, oh, well, you listen, you have a desire, go eat only one, but only one? Of course not. This goes against every rule of the Torah. The Torah always demands from us abstention, control yourself, don't give in. But over here, don't worry, go once at least and give in to your desire. It's hard to understand. I wish I felt good, I have a little cold, otherwise I'd explain it to you the way the Or HaChaim HaKadosh explains it. Maybe another time we'll do it. He explains this story in such a deep way, in such an unbelievable way, where he talks about the Jewish soldier as being a very high spiritual man, very holy. And when he goes into the war and he looks at the Goya, he's able to see that this Goya has some Kiddusha in her. Some Goyim have sparks of holiness in them. And sometimes there's a certain system how to remove the sparks of Kedusha from the Goyim and bring them to the side of Kedusha. It's a whole long piece. It's fascinating. But on a simple level, without going into the mysticism of it, what's the Torah telling us over here? And the interpretation is as follows. To fight the Yetzer Hara is a great, great challenge. The Yetzer Hara is relentless. He comes after mankind day in and day out. And he has all sorts of strategies. And he doesn't let up. He doesn't fatigue. He doesn't become weary or tired. One time the Hafetz Chaim in his elderly years, it was a cold day in Poland, and he woke up early in the morning to go to Bet Knesset, and the Yetzer Hara came to him in the morning and said, "You're an old man. What are you getting up for? Go back to sleep." And the Hafetz Chaim told the Yetzer Hara, "You woke up this morning, and you're older than me. You're already around for 5,700 years. You managed to get up to tell me to go back to sleep. So if you got up, I could also get up." He doesn't stop. Even Hafetz Chaim had to talk to his Yetzer Hara, his evil inclination. It doesn't end. But there's a rule when it comes to the Yetzer Hara. One of his most successful tactics, if we can call it a tactic, he doesn't let a person think. He doesn't give a person a chance or time to ponder or to contemplate. He keeps the person busy from one thing, to another appointment, to another schedule, and human beings just run, men and women, from one place to another. And they never have a chance to think, where am I running? What am I doing? What's my purpose? Why did I come into this world? What am I achieving? What's my goal? The Mesilat Yesharim, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, writes in his book that if people would just stop for a minute and think this thought, why did God create me? Did anybody ever ask that question? Did you ever ask yourself, why did God create me? No, we take it for granted. We're here. Now that we're here, just got to keep busy. What am I doing at 10 o'clock? What am I doing at 11 o'clock? At 12 o'clock I have to do this. At 1 o'clock I have to do this. Now I have an appointment, and I have a schedule. And the Yetzer Hara will just keep you from when you're 8 years old until you're 98 years old. Just keep on going and going and going and going and going. And he'll never cause you to stop and ask the question, what am I doing here? Why did God put me on earth? Just so I can run around and then get tired and then at 120 retire and then what? Then expire and then it's all over? If a person would start to think these type of questions, why? What does Hashem want from me? He created me obviously for a purpose. Because if He didn't need me, He wouldn't have created me. He didn't create me to become very wealthy because I'm not very wealthy. He didn't create me to become something that I'm not, obviously. So what does He want? And you start to think, eventually He says you'll come to the conclusion you were created to serve God. Oh, serve God. How do you serve God? Where do I go to learn this service of God? There must be a book somewhere. There must be a manual. Anybody ever buy a new car? And you're in the car, and you want to know where a certain button is to the rear defog. The back window is getting all fogged up. And you can't find the button. And you're pushing all the buttons, but the rear defog doesn't make any noise. So you can't tell if it's on or not. You don't know which button it is. Ah, you're going to the glove compartment. And over there's a manual. It's a big manual. And it gives you the instructions to the car. You see, a car has to come with a manual. Forget about a car, even if you buy a simple mixer to mix flour or dough or whatever it may be, it comes with a little instruction guide. It tells you everything, how to plug it in, how to put the blade on, exactly how to use it. Everything that's created by a manufacturer comes with an instruction guide. Guess what? You're also manufactured. You're also a creation. You're also a machine. You're a sophisticated machine, albeit, but you're a machine. Who created you? God. Hey, Borei Olam, how does this machine work? Where's the instructions? Ah, so this is, you'll start to think these things on your own. You don't need me to tell you these things. If you just had 10 minutes to sit in the room and you'd ask yourself, the problem is when you have 10 minutes in the room, you take a remote control, tick, and now you're not alone anymore. Now there's somebody screaming at you, bad news, and all sorts of sad stuff and horrific activities, or game shows and stuff like that, which is okay from time to time. But that 10 minutes you could have used to get to eternity. Instead, you've let this intruder come along and interrupt you. Well, that's why we're never alone privately to contemplate what I'm telling you now. And even if you're going to have a moment alone, the cell phone's going to ring. Right away, you lost the moment. You have to answer, you have to send a text. Or you'll be disturbed. The Yetzirah will not give this to you, because he knows if you'll think about this for 10 minutes of your life, it's over. You're going to make a change. You're going to say to yourself, wait, where's this instruction book that the rabbi is talking about? You're going to go in your house, you're going to open the drawer, you're going to see the forks and the knives. It's not over there. You can open up the other drawer, you're going to see the cups and the plates. Where's this instruction book that he's talking about? And eventually, you'll come to the conclusion that the Torah, this is the manual. It's not in the glove compartment. You see over here? This is the glove compartment that we're talking about, the Hechal. That's the glove compartment of the synagogue. Anytime you have a question in life, exactly what you're supposed to do, you open the book, and the Torah gives you details, instructions, what you're supposed to do from when you wake up in the morning until you go to sleep at night, from when you're 1 year old until you're 120 years old, and after that as well. The Torah will tell you exactly what is supposed to be done. The Torah is not a law book. Don't get me wrong. The Torah is not a law book. A law book is like if a person wants to play golf. So there's rules. You have to use this type of club, you have to stand in front of the ball this way, you can only get a certain amount of shots, if you hit it over there, it's out of bounds. There's rules. The Torah is not an instruction book on how to do things. The Torah is a lifestyle. Listen to what I'm telling you. This is a way of life. Lehavdil. To separate. So you know what does it mean, a lifestyle. There are different lifestyles that people accept upon themselves. For example, if you ever went to Hollywood, I'm not saying you should go there, but if you ever went, I'm only thinking that because I just came back from California this week, because I had some derashot to give over there, so my mind is on this place. And they talk about the lifestyle that these people live. They have a certain way of living. If you live over there, you have a lifestyle, and it's a very materialistic lifestyle. My oh my, is it materialistic. When I was walking down one of the streets, every store that you could imagine, with all the pleasures of this world, and all the different glitz of the external, the cars and the jewelry, and you see all the people over there, they're involved in this lifestyle. This is what we do. This is what we do. That's not, it's not a law. It's the way we live. We get up, we do a certain type of behavior by acting a certain way. We build our homes a certain way. We go to a certain restaurant. We drink certain drinks. We talk in a certain... Everything is... The Torah is also a lifestyle, by the way. Now, if you look at the lifestyle of these miserable people in Hollywood, you see, it didn't get them too far. They're not too happy. It leads them to drug addiction, to divorce rate that's staggering, and to the craziest type of things that take place in their families. This life is, it is what it is. Our lifestyle is bound by Torah. And if anybody says, no, I'm not interested in such a lifestyle, why not? God wrote it. The one that makes the machine knows what's the best for the machine. If I buy a car from any car, if I buy a Toyota car and something's wrong with the engine, who do I call? I call Toyota. I call the manufacturer. I'm not going to call Oldsmobile for them to explain to me the engine of a Toyota. They say, what do you want from us? We didn't make the car. You can't call us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created us. Don't you think the manufacturer knows what's best for us? Don't you think he's going to give us a book, a manual that's going to tell us not, forget about Olam Abba, not talking about the next world. We know the next world. Don't you think he's going to tell you the best lifestyle to live in this world? It has to be. But people don't trust the manufacturer. For some reason they think that this book over here is not authentic, or it's not accurate, or they think that it's outdated, and they try to go to other lifestyles of the rich and famous, and they try to have different ways of living, thinking that they're going to find more happiness and security, but they do not. Therefore, the Yetzara doesn't want you to think these thoughts. Did anybody ever think that there's going to be eternity one day? There's going to be Olam Haba one day. And this world is only a bridge. This world over here is not permanent. How do I know? Because nobody has ever lived forever. There was a fellow called Adam HaRishon. He lived close to forever, but he only made it for 930 years. Imagine that. He almost lived one millennium. But at 930, even Adam HaRishon, he left this world. There was a fellow called Metushelach. Metushelach lived even longer than Adam HaRishon. He lived like over 960 years. But at the end of the day, even Metushelach died. Even Moshe Rabbeinu only made it to 120 years. This life that we are in is temporary by nature. Mesilat Yesharim calls it a vestibule. You know what a vestibule is? I don't like that word because it's a very fancy word, but people don't know what it means. So leave a vestibule. That's what he called it. He called it a treklin. No, a treklin is the ballroom. He called it a perozdor. Perozdor. That's the word he used. Perozdor. That's also a hard word for us. The way I want to call the word, it's a bridge. You ever see the Verrazano Bridge? What's the purpose of the Verrazano Bridge? To get from point A to point B. Imagine somebody gets on the Verrazano Bridge and he shuts his car. I'm here. I'm good. What do you mean you're good? It's a bridge. We don't stop on the bridge. You have to move either to one side or to the other. No, I want to stay on the bridge. I'm going to build a tent. You can't build a tent on the bridge over here. This is temporary. This is just for people that are moving. You cannot... This world is a bridge. The bridge bridges us between this world and eternity. The only way to get to eternity is to go through this world. But people forget and think that this world is the priority. And they camp out over here, and they build big mansions, and they put themselves firmly in the ground as if they're going to be here forever, and they have more clothes and more shoes and more items and more... And I'm not telling you, I didn't come to tell you about stuff like that. Buy shoes, buy clothes, I'm not talking about that. As the rabbi said, I can't buy clothes. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about priorities. And therefore, person forgets, he thinks, I'm here for here. Like the Romans said, eat and be merry today, for tomorrow you shall die. Well, I agree with them. If you think that tomorrow you're going to die, you better eat and be merry as much as you can. But if you don't believe that tomorrow you're going to die, then you better prepare yourselves. Whoever prepares themselves on Friday eats for Shabbat. Mishitarach be'erev Shabbat, yochel be'Shabbat. Most of you ladies, if you didn't do already, have made your preparations for Shabbat. And it's a good thing that you did. Because once Shabbat comes... You can have the best intentions. You cannot turn on the oven. You cannot turn on the fire. You're not able to prepare anything. You're not going to go to the store. You cannot shop. If you don't prepare on Friday, you're not going to eat on Shabbat. How about I tell you, forget about Friday and Shabbat. Whoever doesn't prepare in this world is not going to be able to have anything to eat in the next world. Therefore, this world is a world of preparation. This world is that corridor that the Mishnah Shirim is talking about, where it's just to get into the ballroom, but not to get too caught up in the trivialities of this world. But that's the Yetzer Hara. He tries to get you involved and to make you think, no, this is it. The illusion of this world, this is it. All the big buildings and all the stuff and all the glamour that this world has, this is it. But the Yetzer Hara is so smart. He's very, very tricky. He's able to make us like a mirage. You know what a mirage is? when a person is in a desert and he's very thirsty, and he looks and he sees a pond of water. He says, oh my gosh, there's water over here. And he runs to the water. And when he gets to it, he touches and it's sand. He sees an illusion. The Yetzer Hara is an amazing con artist. He's able to make us look at this world as if this is it. This is the real world. Eternity. Who talks about eternity? Did anybody in this room ever sit down with their children and tell them that there's Olam Haba and there's eternity? You've told them about drugs. You've told them about being safe in the car and crossing the street at a green light. But the furthest thing from our mind is eternity. Imagine somebody would sit down tonight at the Friday night table and you would say, say a Divrei Torah. And they would say, I want to talk about Olam Haba. Oh, what are you talking about that for? What are you talking about that? Just tell us something from the parasha. Tell us a story about some rabbi of some sort. No, I want to talk about eternity. I want to talk about where we're going to end up. Oh, that's too ticklish. That's too close. Don't talk about that. The Yetzer Hara wants you to forget about that. He wants you to talk about anything else, but don't talk about the purpose. The purpose is to do mitzvot in this world in order to merit eternity. That's the only reason why you came here. Now, I agree, you have to eat. So you have to eat once in a while. I'm not arguing with you. But eating is like a worker that comes to work. He gets to work, right away, he's drinking coffee. I tell him, hey, what are you doing? A coffee break. Okay, you have a right to have a coffee break. 10 minutes later, he's again drinking coffee. What is this over here? How many cups are you going to have already? It's not Pesach. 4 cups you're going to have? You're not in the work for 10 minutes yet. I'm having another coffee break. No. You didn't come here to have a coffee break. You came here to do work. But in order to do work, once in a while, you need to relax. But when a person's life becomes one extended coffee break, where he's going from one break to another break to another break, so then already you've lost the purpose of what this world is. And granted, is a person allowed to take a vacation from time to time? That's a coffee break. Absolutely, you need to re-energize, you need to eat from time to time. The Hafetz Chaim would say when it was time to eat, he said, what are we going to do? My stomach's empty. Okay, let's time out. We have to eat something so we can get back to our work. Understand the way he ate? This is an interruption, but it's an interruption that we have no choice to do. Let's finish it up as quick as we can and get back to the job at hand. All these ideas that I'm telling you now, if a person would really think about them, well, they'd make a big change in his life. How can it be God would just create us in this world to kill us, but after 100 years? Why would he do that? Does that make sense that God would do such a thing? To put us in this world? For what? Most people don't have a perfect life anyway. It's not like you brought us to the utopia. It's not like we're living in a life that's unreal, where you could say, you know what, it's an amusement park. So yeah, God gave us 100 years of amusement park. It's worth it. Who lives a life of an amusement park? Could you tell me? Show me the most successful person. He doesn't have a life of Riley. Everybody has troubles. So why would God bring you into this world of troubles with all the different tzarot that people have? And then after 100 years, he takes you away. Why? What's the purpose? Could that be the purpose? There was a young boy in a college. He was 18 years old. Lo aleinu ve lo aleichem, he committed suicide. The kid was a genius of geniuses. I don't know how many languages he spoke. I don't know how advanced he was at 18 already. He was graduating college. He was advanced in his years. He was gone. He left in his suicide note the following letter. The reason why I'm committing suicide is because I cannot imagine that all my accomplishments at only 18 years old, and I still have a long way to go, but even at 18 years old, where are these accomplishments going to get me? I'm going to die, and my body and my brain is going to be devoured by the maggots? What's the purpose? So he checked out. Now the truth of the matter is, let me tell you something. He's right. Everybody would be like that then. if a person would think, if the world ends at death, so then what are we doing then? What's it all worth? Why should I struggle to raise children and have a family and to build an empire and to go and accomplish if at the end of the day it just goes? If that's what life was about, then this guy had the right idea. Why waste my time? Why accomplish and become great if my greatness at the end of it? That must be a proof, if God is merciful, that the end of the game is not in this world. There must be an eternity. There must be reward for all these good things that we're doing. And therefore, there's no such thing as death. In Hebrew language, we never say a person died. We say he's niftar. Niftar means he retired. You know what retired means? It's a person who works in a bank. Person works in the bank. When he retires, they don't say he died. No, he moved to a different job. Or he's going to relax at home. When a person leaves this world, there's no such thing as death. Nobody dies. Nobody ever died. I'll give you a secret. Nobody ever died. Cannot die. The soul cannot die. The soul is eternal. The soul lasts forever. All it is the soul, instead of living in this body, it moved locations to live in a different area. That's the area of eternity. But the soul can only take with it what it has in this world. This is the world of action. According to the Kabbalah, this world is called the world of action, the Olam Asiyah. Once, bar minan, a person goes into the grave, you cannot do any mitzvot anymore. Whatever you accomplished, whatever you stacked up, that's what you have. And therefore, somebody once asked me a personal question, but I'll share it with you because I think it's the benefit to you. He said, Rabbi, don't you think you're working too hard? This class and that shiur and that traveling and this item and this daf yomi and whatever they were saying. I'm embarrassed to even say what the guy was saying, but I told them, you see, the difference between me and you is, you don't know me so well. I'm a very greedy person. Wow, you're very greedy? You're doing this for money? I said, no, you're misunderstanding me. God forbid. You cannot do this for money. I'm very greedy because I know this life, God willing, will make it to 120, but it's a short amount of time. We have to collect as much zichuyot as we can. In eternity, we'll get a big hammock, we'll lie down on it, all the sleep that we deprived ourselves. In this world, we'll make it up in Olam Abba, no problem. But this is not the world to be lazy in. This is whatever opportunities that come to you. I always think to myself, how can I not do it? You only get one chance to do these things in this world. In eternity, I'll be kicking myself forever. Ah! How come I didn't do it? Because I was a little tired. So push yourself. So you're tired. So you're a little fatigued. So what's the problem? But you're training in Olam Abba. That's your focus. That's the way you're supposed to always think. To push yourself to great levels. Never to be satisfied. Why should you be satisfied? I want the most eternity. I don't know. I want to bring the most chips to Olam Abba. Whatever it is. I don't know. Chips, whatever they trade in over there. Currency. Call it whatever you want. I'm not satisfied with, I did a good deed for the week. One good deed for the week. Yeah, that's very nice. But I'm not interested. I don't want to sit in the 48th row in Olam Abba. When I go to a show, I want to sit in the front row. I want to sit orchestra seats. I want to have the best seat in the house. What? You think in Olam Abba I'm going to be any different? They're going to tell me, oh, Rabbi, Baruch Abba, you're here. Okay, you're in the bleachers in the back. We have a seat for you. Why? I don't know. That's what you have. That's what you're paid for. You might say, I'll never let that happen. And nobody should let that happen. Therefore, this world over here is a world of action. Now, of course, there are diversions from time to time. But when one's life becomes a total diversion, and that's the Yetzer Hara. He diverts us. Now you're very focused. Oh, now you're very focused. I guarantee you'll walk out of here. It's very fast. You lose it. You lose your focus very quickly. That's what he does. I once went to Bar Minan, one of the worst funerals. A young lady had passed away. And there was many people that came to the funeral. And everybody was inspired. At a funeral, you talk about life. What are we here for? What's the purpose? Everybody's shocked. Everybody said, wow, okay, this is it. This is, everybody's going to get motivated now. No one's going to leave here without making teshuvah. I'll never forget, it was on Route 35. Everybody walked out. And a couple of the men were talking. The hearse was still there. And they're talking, you know, so you want to go shoot some golf balls now? What are you talking about now? You didn't leave 2 minutes from here. Now, I agree. You have to move on in life. You cannot. But the fact that it wears off so, which means the normal reaction would be, well, let's go visit somebody in the hospital. Let's go read Tehillim. Let's go. This can happen to anybody. This is not an exception. But the Yetzirah tries to. It's probably a certain feature that the Yetzirah puts to protect you from changing, because nobody wants to change. Nobody wants to change, so the Yetzirah has to block it out. No, that doesn't happen to everybody. No, don't listen to the rabbis exaggerating. It's okay, because once you start to think the way I'm thinking, you're going to change. There was one fellow who used to come to Seudah Shel Yeshit every Shabbat in Brooklyn. Oh, he was unbelievable. And then all of a sudden he stopped coming for a long time. I said to the boy, to the man he was, well, why did you stop coming? You weren't enjoying it? I was enjoying it tremendously. Your message was unreal. So what happened? He said, I started to change. Oh, that's very bad. I found myself changing. As long as it was entertaining, it was very good. It was a story. But all of a sudden, I felt myself now wanting to do things differently. So I said, I cannot do this anymore. This guy's going to change me. I want to change anybody. I don't want to change anybody. Trust me. All I want to do is change myself. But if somebody has something that's good, you want to share it with somebody. I have a good item here. I have an item over here that I know can get you eternity. Just like if there was a sale in the market, wouldn't you call somebody, oh, you got to go to this place over there, there's a sale, they're selling this thing for so, because you're excited to give somebody good advice. I'm not interested in making missionary over here. You're not obligated to listen to anything that I say. And I don't get a commission on anybody that takes my advice either. I have to worry about my own self, my own family. But I want to share with you something that I know already. I know that this item over here is a good product. And I learned from the holy books that this product can get you a very, very good piece of Olam Haba. So therefore, join me. And that's the Yetzirah's tactic. Don't think of any of these things. I'm sure if a rabbi would get up at a pulpit and he would talk about Gehinnom, oh, the committee would start making dirty looks at him. What are you talking about this for? We don't want to upset any of the constituents over here. Talk about, you know, nice things. Talk about Parashat HaShavua. What does it say in the New York Times? Talk about current events. But don't get so close to that stuff. Nobody wants to hear that. Because once you start hearing that, now you have to change. And once you start having to change, that's all over. Paro knew this trick. You remember when the Jewish people were in Egypt, and all of a sudden, at one point, Moshe Rabbeinu came to Paro, and he said, the people really want to go serve God. Just for 3 days, they want to have like a seminar to serve God. What does Paro say? They have too much time on their hands. They have time to contemplate God. They're not busy enough. Give them more work. Keep them busy so they cannot come to this conclusion. Don't you understand? This busyness of life, busy doing nothing, busy going nowhere, busy involving ourselves in the frivolities of life, in the wasting of the time. I'm talking about, you think I'm talking to anybody in particular over here? I'm thinking about my own self, of how much wasted time during the day, if I would be able to convert that into more learning time, into more teaching time. But I don't take advantage as much as I can. If I was really focused the right way, we would never leave the Beit Midrash. If I'm in the vaults of Chase Manhattan and I'm picking up $100 bills, I don't leave so fast. When they tell me, you can leave now, I'm going to stay a few more minutes. You never have enough. That's what this is over here, Lahavdil. I'm giving you a childish example. This world over here is a world of deeds, and you don't get another chance. And the stakes are very high. The stakes are eternity. You're playing over here the biggest. So somebody asked me a question. But Rabbi, how do you know there's eternity? Oh. You ever get a postcard? I could tell you that there's Disney World, because I got a postcard from Disney World. I was there. But you tell me, Olam Haba, show me a picture. I cannot show you a picture. Could you show me somebody that was there? I cannot show you somebody that was there either. So then you're talking, Haki Balash, Olam Haba, eternity. Who says? It's a good question. Again, you see, that's the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara doesn't want him to get involved in this, because he knows if he'll believe in it, he's going to have to start acting in a different way. He's going to start having to do mitzvot. I told him two answers. I will give you the two answers that I told him. Just in case you run into that person and he asks you, you'll know what to answer him. The first answer I told him, I'm Toby. The first answer I told him was insurance. You're right. I don't know if there's Olam Haba. Maybe there is, maybe there's not. 50-50. Yeah? Let's assume that there's no Olam Haba. Okay, no Olam Haba. So then all this work that I did, it was a waste of time. You got me. On that 50% that there's no Olam Haba, then all these classes and all the stuff that we involve, you're right, I bet wrong. You know, 50% red, 50% black. 50-50. I made the wrong bet. But let's say there is Olam Haba. Maybe there is. 50-50, we don't know. You don't know and I don't know. Maybe there is. Okay, well, what's the downside? If there is, and I did all these good deeds, wow, I'm a millionaire. And if there is Olam Haba and I didn't protect myself, now, God forbid, for eternity, I'm doomed. Look at the downside. Look what I have to lose. If there's no Olam Haba, okay, so I wasted my time a little. Okay. If there is, if I prepared, I'm good forever. If I didn't prepare on that side that there's Olam Haba, now you're finished forever. Is it worth the risk? It's just logic. You're going to willing to roll a dice like that? You're so confident that there's not, that you're not going to hedge. I told the fellow, you have a house?
Yes.
You have fire insurance?
Yes. Why?
What are the odds you're going to have a fire in your house? Very rare. But in the rare case that there's going to be a fire, you want to insure yourself that you're going to... So for something that is such a rarity, you have insurance. So why don't you have Olam Haba insurance also? Maybe there is Olam Haba. Wow, he thought about it like that. He said, it makes sense to me. And I said, the truth of the matter is, for everything else in your life, you don't need to have a proof. When it comes to Olam Haba, you need a proof? He said, what are you talking about? I said, you fly in an airplane?
Yes.
You know what a pilot is?
No.
So what are you doing? I trust him. You trust him. Do you know what school he went to? Do you know if he went to aviation school? Do you know if there's even a pilot in the cockpit? No, you just sat down, you have your Terra Blue chips and your soda, you're happy. You don't care who's in the cockpit, who's done nothing. You just, the plane lands in Florida, you're happy. How come you have so much faith? You have faith. You have faith in what? JetBlue, you have faith in? For something that your life is risking on it, you trust. I trust that the voice that I'm hearing through the PA system is really a pilot over there, that he knows what he's doing. I don't want to scare you, but tell the guy, maybe the pilot's drunk. How do you know? I'm trusting. I don't know. I try to. There's many people on the plane with me. I trust. I don't know. You're right. I don't know. But you got on the plane. So why, when it comes to things that have to do with your physical, you trust? Because I want to go to Florida. When it comes to Olam Haba, I want to see a picture. I want to see a proof. Now you're interrogating me with a million and one questions. How come you didn't interrogate the pilot a million and one questions? Because who cares? Oh, so you're a hypocrite. when it comes to your physical needs, because you want to enjoy yourself physically, you put your trust in anybody. And when it comes to your spiritual, show me, who says? Then I told him the second answer. I know I asked you a question, I'm going to get back to my questions of this shit. I told him a story I'm going to tell you something I heard that, I'm interrupt myself. Something I heard from Rav Chaim Brim. It just came to my mind. He once told us, we were in his house. I'm saying a house. I wish you would see his house. He didn't even have a bathroom in his house. He has to walk down the corridor to the bathroom. He lived in a small little apartment. We used to learn in his bedroom on his bed. His wife couldn't go to sleep because we were having the shi'ud at 11:30 at night on Thursday nights, me and my friends. Used to learn in a little alleyway in Me'a Sha'arim till you get there to one of the nooks and crannies and the crevices, 15 Mechot Hevrat Tehillim. We used to go to every Thursday night and learn with the great Sadiq. He was fasting most of the times that we were there, even though it was very late at night. We would sit in his bedroom and learn with him Torah. And he would share with us some of the greatest secrets of the world. Things like this that I'm talking to you about. So he said once, the Pasuk says, En Sur Kelohenu. In Sur, there's no rock like our God. But the Gemara says, in Sayar Kenohinu, there's no painter like God. God is the greatest painter. I didn't know God is a painter. What is he painting? So Rav Chaim Brim used to explain like this. He said, in life, if a person draws a picture with paint, I don't know, he draws a sun, and he draws grass, and he draws some cows and a farmhouse picture. The further you're away from the picture, the more real it looks. You're far away. Wow, look at this. There's a farm over there. The closer you get, the more fake you see it is. God is a reverse artist. He created this world. This is his painting. This world is God's masterpiece. He said, the closer you are in this world, the closer you indulge yourself, the more real you think it is. The more you're involved in it, in the luxuries and in the materialism and the fun and the pleasure and the pastimes, the closer you are to this world, the more real you think it is. The further you step away from this world and you look at it from the outside, you realize it's a fake. It's a reverse painter. Here, when you step back at the world, Baruch Hashem, we were able to step back in our lives. Once we were introduced to the instruction book, we step back and we start to look at the world. They're running on a treadmill that doesn't lead them to anywhere. Just to more games and more fun and more. But what does it get them at that in 120 years? What are they going to say? Sometimes you hear the rabbis say it at the funerals, but they're wrong. They're wrong. I'll say it in front of all of you. He was very well dressed. Who cares? Who cares? Very well dressed. Where's that going to get him? Because he wore fancy ties. Where's that going to get a person? He used to like to eat pancakes in the morning. What's that going to do for a person that he ate pancakes? That's what the goal of life is? To be well dressed and eat pancakes? Of course not. Shtuyot. Haver havanim amar kohelet. The purpose of the life is to do deeds in order to merit eternity. And you'll only realize when you step back. You start to say, wow, the world is crazy. What are they doing? They're involved. They're wasting their time. Let me collect all the diamonds that are available. It's a reverse picture. But when you're involved in this world, oh, it's a lot of fun. Oh, more fun, more consumption, more enjoyment. But that's not your purpose. Who am I talking to, by the way? I know what you're thinking in your brain. Rabbi, we came into the class. Ladies, I also came to the class. We're rebuking each other over here. I'm not picking on anybody in particular. But you can never do enough. That's what I'm saying. I'm rebuking myself. We're not doing enough. More learning, more charity, more visiting the sick, more hospitality, more bake sales, more extending our... You can't just say two times... What two times? What two times? What do you mean two times? Why are you putting a cap on eternity for? You have to have that greed that I'm talking about. I have the greed, a little have it. But everybody has to have it. Where you're never satisfied. Because once it's over, it's over. I wondered if a fellow died with $1 million in the bank. I wondered if when he got to Olam Haba, he was probably telling him, hey, let me just give a few more dollars to charity. Too late. Too late. The money already went somewhere else. The government took care of it. And this one took care of it. This is the only place where you can do anything. This is Olam Asiyah. Anyway, to answer my original, I could talk on this for 100 hours. Don't get scared, I'm not going to talk about it anymore. I wish I would have been able to, because you have to hear this all the time. You forget. What are you going to think? You're not going to see your son in the Garden State Parkway, Olam Abba, don't forget, Gan Eden. You're not going to see this in the newspapers. All this is diversion. The Yetzirah tries to divert you from all this. Don't think about what I'm telling you. Don't think about it. Don't contemplate it. Because he knows once you start thinking the way I'm thinking, it's over. You're going to start having to make adjustments. And I'm sure there's a couple of skeptics even in the crowd thinking, nah, come on, don't take it so seriously. The rabbi is making also exaggeration. I'm not exaggerating. If anything, I'm under-exaggerating. Anyway, the guy in the war, back to our friend in the war, he's in the war fighting a war. What's the main thing that's on his mind? To win the war, and that he shouldn't die. God understands, in war, you have no time to think. In war, it's not fair to tell the soldier now that he has to stop contemplating and thinking about the girl. Is she? He can't think. He's thinking about his life. He's thinking about his existence in the warfare. In the time of war, God says, I'll give you one exception. Since your mind is totally 100% preoccupied with something else, you're not in the state to fight the Yetzer Hara. You can't fight two wars at the same time. You're fighting physical, a battle over here. I'll give you a chance. If the Yetzer Hara gets you, don't worry, go with the lady. I cannot hold you responsible in that case. But outside of war, you're not in war, nobody's in war now. But the Yetzer Hara creates things around us. Like I told you, do never become a slave to your schedule. The slave to the schedule is one of the ways of the Yetzer Hara. That he doesn't want us to be free for 1 second, because he knows once you're free for 1 second, right away you're going to start thinking. And all of a sudden you might start thinking about God. And what am I doing here? And how old am I already? And what do I have to show for myself? And what are my accomplishments? And what did I do to enhance my eternity? Oh, so the Yetzer Hara right away, you'll start to think, the phone's going to ring, oh, saved by the bell, oh Hashem, I don't have to think about this, you saved my life, where are we going, let's go anywhere, this is what we're talking about. From the war time, you're exempt, because the war you can't think, but outside of war, this should be our discussion. Ladies, I didn't tell you anything you didn't know already. But how do you like that? When the Misilat Yeshirim wrote his book, he also said, I'm not telling you anything you don't know. I'm just repeating to you old ideas that need to be refreshed, because since you don't hear it day in and day out, and you just know it from when you were 2 years old, you forget it, and therefore you become lazy in your practice. Girls, ladies, you should be very proud of yourselves. All this that you're doing in this class is to this subject. You just sat for an hour. Hope it didn't feel like an hour. But you sat for an hour. You know what you just did to your eternity? If you could see in the heavens what this mitzvah does, Friday afternoon at this time, nobody's studying Torah, I'm sorry to tell you. The kollel is closed. There's no other classes, official classes. Yeah, so a few guys sitting in the midrash reading by themselves. But a class? Is there another class at this time? Doesn't exist on Fridays, doesn't exist. You're holding up the whole world with this class. You think I'm laughing? I didn't come to compliment you. I'm serious. I'm also happy about myself. We're holding up the world. We're doing unbelievable things. They're shoveling in Olam Abba. They're shoveling in Olam Abba. And because the time is very auspicious, Friday afternoon is the holiest moment of the week. This time after midday is the holiest time of the week to study Torah. We fell into a gift to study Torah at this holy moment, and then to go into Shabbat with the Sechut. These are great things, but never be satisfied. When I think of it, I don't walk out and say, wow, we did a good thing. I say, you know what? We have to do more things. Let's make another class at 3 o'clock. Let's get another group. We have to just do a lot. And trust me, you'll thank me. When you get to Olam Haba, you say, Rabbi, thanks for pushing me. Some of you go to exercise, and the guy pushes you, another push-up. I don't want to do another push-up, please. I don't want to do another push-up. I'll pay you. I don't want to do another push-up. You have to do one more. And you do it. At the end, you feel good somehow. At the end, you think it's worth it somehow. That's what it is. You have to push yourself in Ruchaniyut. And then, Bezat Hashem, as the Mishnah says, Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chedek Le'olam Haba. Everybody has a chedek. I don't want just a small chedek. I want a big chedek. And therefore, push yourself to the maximum. Don't be scared. Take coffee breaks from time to time. Eat from time to time. Relax from time to time. But at the end of the day, the bridge is to get you from here to somewhere else. And Olam Haba is a reality. And Bezat Hashem, all of you will be zocheh to the highest levels of eternity. Amen ve'amen.